Hello, welcome to the Walden's Words pandemic intro with badass Emily Burke and semi-badass Scott Waldman. Hello, Emily.
Hello, we are missing Jed in the intro again.
He does that, but he will be on the show, which we recorded actually a few weeks ago. And most importantly, we've got Mike Castellucci, who is the regional promotion manager for Atlantic Records, which is not a small indie label.
No, it is a very, very big one. And I always like it when we have people from labels come on to hear, you know, because they hear the manager side from us a lot. We have a lot of publicists, but I feel like the label system is something that people feel like they have a grip on, but then they hear something like regional promotion manager and they're like, actually, I don't think I know exactly all that labels do.
Well, it's kind of like, what was that thing, MTV Diary? You think you know, but you have no idea.
I think you just aged yourself. I've never even heard of MTV Diary.
Oh my God. Mike definitely has. So you're outnumbered, but in this forum, I'm not outnumbered. It's like 1-to-1. Anyway, I miss Jed. I miss Mike. I'm really, really happy that we had the chance to do this episode. And I think one of the cooler things about this episode, which we might have touched upon, was Mike and I were Facebook friends. We got on a call and it was like a really, really super call that was, I think, just like a half hour of just constant fun chatter. And I was like, you know what? Let's get this guy on the show.
It's always weird how connections can be made, but I guess not in the age of social media. But I feel like you're one of the rare people that actually uses social media well, where you take it from out of social media into real life. And then we get cool guests like Mike.
Can you compliment me again? I'm really reveling.
I haven't seen you in person in a while, but I bet your hair is cool.
Oh my God, my hair is so long. Cool is definitely a debatable term, but I'll take it. Thank you. Mike, I think, is a cool guy, and there's no debate on that.
No, no debate. 100% totally agree. We're all unanimous. I bet Jed agrees wherever he is.
Wherever the hell Jed is, wherever the Fuchs Jed is. But at any rate, I hope that you enjoy this wonderful episode featuring Mike Castellucci. Every single episode of Waldman's Words is on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific time, which is the time of the Looch and the time of us, 8 p.m. Eastern time, which is my former time zone and Emily Burke's former time zone. And you could do the Sundays.
Sundays are bright and early. Hopefully none of you are awake this early on a Sunday at 5 a.m. Pacific time. Yeah, but you have like a baby and a wife and you're like a real adult. I'm 23 and don't have to do that. Bright and early Sundays at 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time. And you can listen to this episode after it airs and any episode before this one anytime that you want on adobe.com, Spotify, your Amazon smart home. I'm not going to say it, so the one in Scott's house goes off.
And
did I say iTunes? Also iTunes.
I think that that's a solid intro. Jed, we miss you. Mike, digital hug. Stick around for this wonderful episode. Hello, welcome to the new normal, another pandemic episode of Waldman's Words with my pandemic co-hosts, Emily Burke and Jed Fuchs. And depending upon who you are, the most or least important person on this show, Mike Castellucci.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Woo! Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you guys. Thank you for having me.
No, we scheduled this a while ago and I had a really, really good conversation with you on the phone, and I guess I'll start the show with that. One of my New Year's resolutions this year was to connect with more people that I am quote unquote friends with on social media, because I was talking with a buddy and I realized that like if I ran into some of my Facebook friends on the street, you know, prior to the pandemic, I might not even know who they are, yet I would know a little bit about their grandparents. So I wanted to change that. I shot you a message and we talked on the phone for about an hour.
Yeah, that sounds right, if I remember correctly. So much has happened since then.
So much has happened since then, but let's focus on your life because that's what this show's about. So like me, you are from the East Coast, correct?
That is correct. Yep, Northern Jersey.
Well, I am from the South Shore of Long Island, but we could still talk. And I was, you know, where you grew up, there's quite a music scene, but I don't know what it was like in your household. What were your parents listening to?
You know, it's really interesting. I'll kind of get more into this as I kind of go down the rabbit hole of my life. But yeah, I mean, as we know, North Jersey, Long Island, there was such a scene, especially around the early aughts, that I would become interested in, but I think much later than others. When I grew up, in a small town that was very much like athletics based. My dad had done a little bit of music. He knew how to play trumpet. My mom was actually a cantor. She was a singer at church. So when it came to music, it's like, oh, it's in church that I have to go to every Sunday. And when I was interested in learning more about music and had these, you know, ideas of, oh man, what instrument can I learn on? My dad was like, well, we have a trumpet in the basement, so you can do that because that's free. And that's exactly what I did. So I really started as a trumpet player and didn't have any older, I'm the oldest, I have a younger sister, but I didn't have too many like kind of outside influences to look to, except for some cousins. And I think when I really kind of broke into, you know, what music can be, it was, you know, Green Day, Dookie. And that was
I love the trumpet line on She.
She? Oh, yeah. It's well, it, and you know what's so interesting too is like there were those moments, and I, you know, had my exciting moments of getting into ska as well. But for the longest time, like when I was a kid, trumpet was just like not a cool thing. Like where I was, it was like, oh, you could play guitar, you could play bass, you could get away with piano and drums, but like trumpet wasn't as widely accepted as I feel like it got in like 2007. And like 2008 and 2009, which like looking back, it's like, oh damn, I really should have just doubled down on it. But
How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay. So I am 39 and it's great that you spoke about ska, but around the same time that ska, like the third wave movement, when No Doubt and Sublime and then the Boss Tones, Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake were getting some major success, Cake was doing really well, and
totally.
They had a trumpet player.
They did, and I thought that was so cool. But like, and you know, again, this is also I think through the lens of being in this small town where I think some people were kind of in on Cake, and there were definitely like some kids that I went to school with who were into ska and understood Catch 22. I mean, Keys Be Nice was another huge album where it's like, oh my god, what the hell is this? But you know, kind of navigating it, it was still like, okay, if you had a horn, you probably were a band dork.
And you still are.
And I still am, but you know what it is? I'm cool and willing to embrace that now. Because no, you know, assumptions of who you are in high school matter for anything, right? But you know, as I grew up, music was something that I was always interested in. I think
Have I ever told you have a great radio voice?
So we're going to have to get into that too later. I know. We're going to have to get to that too later down the line. It actually is the first time I've heard that in a while, and I can't wait to come back to that. But, you know,
like as NPR. Far as, I feel like you'd be like a good NPR guy. I don't know. My voice, it's kind of like too whiny and Jewy, and Jed's just too angry, and Emily's too valley. But my... You got this.
We're like 5 minutes into the episode and I'm just like, I haven't said anything. I'm just like listening. I'm like, huh, this guy. Yeah.
This guy.
I'm so honored. This is horrible for my ego, but I appreciate it.
It's soothing, you know? Yeah. Like NPR, I feel like he could be delivering the worst bad news of all time. And I'd be like, ah, I'm calm.
Wow. Well, rioters blew up the state of New Jersey, but you say it in such a calm way.
Right, exactly. Now,
in today's news, we bring you to Paterson, New Jersey, where everything has burned to the ground. But city officials are saying that there is still hope for the ashes that once was the great city of Paterson, New Jersey.
Aww, there it is.
Mike Castellucci, NPR, Oakland, California.
Send it over to them now. Mike, now, of course, the reason you're on the show is because you're a promotion manager at Atlantic. So after that's all done and you go to NPR, that's definitely your next career move. Sorry, we've already picked for you.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, but good.
But that's like the reason we had you on the show is because you actually hold a really awesome position in the music world and we're interested in your input. As we were talking about ska, Scott had a one-man ska band called Third Wave Scott.
Where I'm sorry, I hate to do this, but I just wonder how you're pronouncing or spelling Scott. Are you spelling it S-K-A-T-T?
You can't spell it S-C-A-T, so yeah, it's got to be S-K-A-T-T.
Yeah,
you really put the ska in Scott, yeah.
Exactly.
There's an apostrophe.
Exactly.
Yes.
Where he's like stamping and making the drum sounds and the horn and the guitar. It's really interesting. You got to see. But what about your upbringing? So you got into horn. You were a band dork. You tried to tiptoe around it, but you were a band dork.
That's fair to say. Yeah, absolutely. But it was also, I think a lot of times it comes down to the environment in which we grow up in. I mean, you know, I didn't know about how to get into a rock group. I didn't, you know, these things existed and I listened to them, but there was no excess. There weren't a lot of kids where it's like, oh, I'm going to have like a jam session. That came like a little later in my life. Because again, I was just the circumstances. I was in a very small town. Excuse me. And another thing that, my parents, were really good about, when I was younger, getting involved. There was a program in New York City called Jazz for Young People at Lincoln Center, where this trumpet player, Wynton Marsalis, he's a classically trained, he's a jazz monster from New Orleans, lives in New York, does a lot of stuff with jazz and jazz education. He would do installments, I think it was like monthly, and we'd go into the city, and it was, you know, Wynton would talk about different musicians and play some of their music with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. And it was a pretty wonderful cultural moment looking back to be able to see that. Now, as a young kid, no one thought jazz was cool, but there was so much to understand just from the lessons and, you know, where jazz music even came from that I think later on I would learn, you know what, I was very fortunate to experience
that.
And one of the most amazing opportunities, that Wynton did, Mr. Marsalis would be in the green room afterwards, and any kid who wanted to come up and meet him could do so. So, you know, after the show, there'd be a line at the green room and he would take his time. He would take photos, and really like spend time with you. And I remember at one point my dad said something like, oh, when you see him, tell him you play trumpet. And I'm like, man, like, that's not cool. Like, I can't do that. And, I'm trying to, I think this was like third grade-ish. It was elementary school.
Oh,
for sure.
Man. Oh, you were
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The voice that I won't imitate now, cause I want people to know about my like low NPR voice instead of my prepubescent obnoxious voice.
I just want you to stop your story for a second. Can you imagine like a third grader with his voice?
I'm going to have nightmares for the rest of the week. Now, thanks.
I freak the hell out.
Mr. Waldman, can I please go to the bathroom?
You hang out with
Daddy, Jesus. I have shit my pants and you need to change my diaper. It's weird.
Oh, no.
This well, anyway, takes such a weird turn so fast.
let's overcorrect on the steering here. So we go, we're in line. And the moment comes and it's like, hey, look, you know, Mr. Marsalis, you know, I play trumpet too. And he looked at me and was like, okay, bring your trumpet in next time. Bring your trumpet in, come back here and let's talk about it. So that was interesting. And a month went by and we were going back and I brought my trumpet with me to the Jazz for Young People.
And the doors were boarded up.
Exactly. The doors were boarded up. Everything was gone. But so then, you know, we're in the line and I forget how it happened, but like somehow, like, he's like, I think we saw him and like, I had the trumpet. He's like, okay, cool. Like, just hang on a sec. And he kind of went through the rest of the line and everyone left. And he's like, just come with me. And like me, my little sister, my parents, now are following Wynton Marsalis, you know, through the green room towards like the backstage area, seeing some people in the band saying hi, getting this experience that I had never had in my entire life. And he's like, what music are you working on? And I remember I had the trumpet part for the Jurassic Park theme song that the fifth grade band was working on. So by the way, for all the fact checkers out there, it was fifth grade that this happened.
The difference. You're in fourth grade.
Yeah. Exactly. But so we were, he brought me backstage and we're looking at this Jurassic Park theme song, very, very straightforward. And I played for him and I got a masterclass from Wynton Marsalis. It's insane to me that this happened. Wow. Looking back on it. And it didn't stop there. It wasn't, okay, cool, now get out of here. It was, bring the trumpet back next time and let's do this again. And we did that. And I think then this was like pretty embarrassing. So same thing happens now. Instead of going backstage, we're in the green room and there's a piano. And my parents still, I forget, I think my dad was able to fire off this photo. And it's a photo of me playing trumpet next to Wynton Marsalis at the piano. And the music I had was Georgia On My Mind. So I was just playing the trumpet part to that. And Wynton Marsalis, who's an extremely accomplished musician, starts comping chords on the piano. And when you're younger, right, and you're trying to learn fundamentals, it's like you learn in the classroom, right? You learn in band. Like the way you learn is very linear. So I'm hearing this song that I had heard countless times with a bunch of other fifth graders playing their instruments. But in that moment, I had never heard it with just a piano, and it totally threw me for a loop. And I think I said something like, I'm sorry, could I just play this alone? Because it was like throwing me off so bad. And to this day, I'm still very shaken when I think that I told Wynton Marsalis to stop playing.
Excuse me, Mr. Marsalis.
Shut the fuck up. No, anyway. So
yeah.
I didn't expect to talk about your fourth grade days for this long, but I'm stoked we did. But No, you have nothing to apologize about. It's all Jed's fault. But basically, did you study music in college, or am I remembering a different mic astrology?
No, you're remembering the right mic. So what this all eventually led to was I was introduced to a mentor of mine named Mondre Moffitt through Wynton, and would get lessons through him. And that's what put me on the path of wanting to take on music. I was really diving into the trumpet and realizing very quickly that when it came to what I wanted to do, I mean, I wanted to be a performer. Deep down, I knew I wanted to be a performer. But at the time, knew nothing about the industry. My dad worked for a bank. My mom was a cantor. So, I mean, you know, a lot of that stuff she would just do for free, and then she'd get paid for weddings and funerals. So that's all I knew as far as, if you wanted to make money in music, you either had to be a rock star or you had to be a band director. And my dad was very keen on saying, hey, you know what? Let's maybe cut your losses with the performance stuff and, you know, get yourself a teaching degree so at least you have it. So went to school for music education, completely thinking that I would be a band director coming out of college. Went to school, majored in trumpet, and eventually switched to a performance degree. And from there realized, okay, maybe going for a music performance degree in Greensboro, North Carolina might not be the most viable option. And I transferred back up to New Jersey to William Patterson, and they had a music management degree. And that was the first time that I had any sort of taste of what like the music industry was. I thought like musicians just booked all their own shit. It was all them. And then there's these things called managers, but who knows what they really fucking do.
I don't even know figure what it out. I do, and I am.
It's crazy, right? Like managers blow my mind. Like, especially the really good ones, like how many of them are the successful ones are self-starters who can really figure out, I mean, look, before we go off on a tangent there. So I transfer up to William Patterson, do the music management degree, and coincidentally fall into a like regional band with a good friend of mine, Jason Soroka. But he was a great songwriter, and we both cared about music. So we met in a class, would kind of trade songs, and had this idea of he had the band was very much like a Bright Eyes sort of sound. It was a very indie band with beautiful writing. And we had this idea of, we were like, well, okay, here, you sing the songs and play the guitar parts. And we were just noodling around one day in my apartment, and I was like playing trumpet lines on top of it, and it was fun. We had a blast, and it was like, okay, like, let's try playing out and see if this is anything. And I didn't think people would get it. I thought it was fun for us. I didn't think it was going to be interesting for anyone. And lo and behold, there was some sort of activity. It was nothing crazy. But we started to catch a little bit of a buzz. It was a big deal when, you know, we were on like Absolute Punk or something. And it sort of ended where we were at this juncture of, okay, it's time to finish our masters. It's time to go on tour. And what we wanted to do was not get signed, but do like a licensing gig or have something where we could maybe get placement in a commercial. Like, to us, that was going to be success. And, you know, we kind of started pushing off some of the records, and it got to a point where it's like the rest of the scene moves on, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, it fell apart. But after that, that's when we had met different people who were within the music industry. And that's when I thought, if I can't be the musician or the performer myself, I want to help those performers who have the fire in their belly and want to be able to take it to the next step.
What year was this, and where were you?
This was in North Jersey. And this was 2010, I believe. Okay. 2010, 2009. So I got an internship with Warner Music's kind of independent imprint, which was called ILG at the time, which has now turned into ADA, which is Alternative Distribution Alliance. And I was randomly placed into the radio and TV promo department, realized that I had no idea this job existed, had no idea that people got paid to do this stuff. And it was like super exciting. So I did that my summer of my junior year into my senior year. Senior year, did another internship with a music publisher, Spirit Music Group, which is based out of Chelsea. Realized that that was interesting as well, but there was something about the radio promo side of things and working with a label that just really excited me. There was this attitude that I really liked. It did seem very artist focused, which was a huge relief coming from the performance side, knowing that, hey, there are some people here who do care about the musicians. And I had tried to chase down a job as an assistant, specifically with the radio promo departments, you know, anywhere anyone would take me for a while. So I graduated in 2011, and it was off to the job search. And not having an internship my summer after senior year was difficult. At that time, it was hard for, I think, a lot of people just to get jobs in general, let alone in the music industry, which is so small at points. So I think I was keeping track for a while, but I had counted out that I had applied to about 300 different jobs. And, you know, it would be something where even with a network of people in the industry, you know, someone would be on vacation or something would happen, or you get an interview and it's like, hey, you know, like there's 70 other people who have interviews. And that was a really frustrating time. I was also like juggling just like, you know, side gigs, whether it was like serving at like an Outback Steakhouse, working in a liquor store, all that shit.
Yeah.
Like, teaching, you know, just anything to pay rent where if the opportunity came, I could cut the tie and just jump to the real career. So to try and make a long story a little short, one of the things I did was I would get frustrated when I wouldn't get these jobs, and I would go for a run, which I had never done in the past. I was never a runner, but started to do it because I also needed to get my ass in shape. And I got to a point where I forget what it was, but I was training for the Chicago Marathon, and I was thinking to myself, where can I put my resume where someone will see it? Like, I feel like I've put it anywhere. It's like, where's the one place I haven't put it yet?
And well, you can run and deliver it. If you're like really a talented runner.
Well, and so that's kind of what I ended up doing. I thought, well, okay, the Chicago Marathon.
I was silly.
No, I was like, well, the Chicago Marathon's pretty big, right? You know, it's a big city. So all I need to do is, you know, maybe by chance, just run in front of someone who works in the music industry long enough that they can read my resume if I like blew it up on a big piece of paper and put it on my back when I ran the race. So I talked to a media relations professor I had who taught me how to do press releases. And I was like, look, here's the story that I want to put out there. And that story is, you know, at a time where people are trying their hardest and trying everything they can to get a job, you know, what are people willing to do? And I'm willing to run to work. And I kind of put the press release out, and it was that, you know, I'm going to run the marathon. I was running for a charity, and I was going to blow up my resume on my back in the hopes that someone would see it and just say, hey, maybe here's the guy. Cause it's the one place I hadn't heard of yet.
No way.
Yeah. So,
I was joking, but you know, every joke has an element of truth.
Yeah, no, and it was wild because it gained a lot of traction. I sent the press release far and wide, and one of the biggest looks I got was News 12 New Jersey was like, hey, we want to pick up the story. So the news van comes to my apartment and we're talking, and I'm showing them the resume and kind of my whole point around it. And I remember actually going into the restaurant, and they had News 12 on. And like, you know, the restaurant's like just opening up, and my manager's looking, he's like, wait, is that, what are you doing on TV, man? And it's like, and they ran the story like while I was there. And at one point there was this guy who had gone to William Patterson and had a booking agency. He still books tribute acts in New Jersey, which apparently like actually makes a decent amount of money and throughout the tri-state area. But I had had him as a table at one point. He spoke in front of my class, and I kind of did a cold call to him, like right while he was like, not while he was having dinner, but like before we got that far, I was like, hey man, you spoke in my class. I would love to try and do some part-time stuff with you just so I can at least get my foot in, so I can have like work experience with a music industry company. And at the time he's like, you know, like I'm pretty full right now. Like it was a very small staff. It's like, I don't really have the space. So thanks, but you know, sorry. Okay. Totally fine. I think maybe a month or two later is when this story ran in News 12, and he shot me an email and was like, hey, I know I told you I didn't have anything, but seeing that work ethic, like, you know, I can make it for something like that.
No way.
Well, we talk a lot on this show about making your own work, and I believe we have to wrap up very soon. Just segment one. Don't worry. We're not done with you yet. But Emily, we're good on time, or can I ask them the adjective question?
You definitely have time for one adjective.
All right. What word would you use to describe the first, or actually not the first, because that'd be really weird, the past 23 minutes of your life?
Interesting.
And when we come back from the break, he's going to use an adjective to describe the first 23 minutes of his life, which will be very interesting.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I thought this first segment was beautiful. Enjoy these commercials. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Waldman's Words on Adobe Radio. That's Scott Waldman. We're your co-hosts, Jed Fuchs and Emily Burke. And on the show today is the illustrious Mike Castellucci of Atlantic Records. He went from band geek to band freak, and we're here to learn the second half of how he made it happen.
Band geek to band freak. Gosh, I better love that line. That's my new Instagram bio. That's it.
Yeah. I was wondering if that would be too far, but so I'm glad you liked it.
I loved it.
But we're now into section two, and I feel like while we got the full education on your background and your education, now we want to hear about like where you're into now. We might even have to like skip a step because you launched straight pretty quickly into working entertainment and working into records. And now you do something super cool, which is managing at the biggest record label around. So what's like a day in the life for you? And I definitely mean a day in the life before March 15th, 2020. For reference, if you're hearing this decades in the future or at any time, really, let's go back to a time of a little bit more normalcy. What is like a normal day look like for you, or maybe a normal week?
The interesting thing about this job is every day can be a little bit different, year over year specifically. But what I do is, I'm a radio promotion manager. I work with the radio promo team, the pop rock radio promo team for Atlantic Records. And our purpose is to create audience. It's to increase audience. So, for those that know how record labels work, this is going to be.
I assume that no one does. This is an informative show designed for that. And also,
yeah, and we're stupid
without being condescending that the three of us don't.
Yeah, we're dumb.
Okay. We're dumb. Yeah,
no one in this life is dumb. Maybe a couple people that I can count on one hand, but no one on this conversation is dumb.
Aww. Okay, and this conversation is great. If you said like in the real world is dumb, I'd say just log on to my Facebook and try to say that. Anyway, let's get back.
Log on to anyone's Facebook. But so, you know, I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier about how when I was in a group, we weren't really interested in being signed to a label. Essentially, the way a major label works is, you know, a label will help put down money for recording, for touring. Every deal is going to be a little different. And what a major label wants to do is bring these people to a huge status. I mean, we're dealing with superstars, ideally, right? Bruno Mars is on the label. Cardi B is on the label. Ed Sheeran is on the label. You know, even to an extent, I would say Portugal the Man has been, you know, a project that we've been able to go from, you know, a pretty small audience to a pretty big audience.
Yeah.
Relatively quickly.
I saw them at Chain Reaction in Orange County with like 30 people. Just after Anatomy of the Ghost ended, it's pretty nuts. And then now they have a mega hit.
Huge. Yeah. And they have a wonderful message. And I love those guys so much. And it's been so cool because that I think is probably my favorite promo story is, you know, working with this band, seeing them do smaller venues and then get to a point where they would return to markets selling double the tickets. And doing something that no one really thought in the radio world would happen, but delivering them a number one record at the top 40 format, that pop music. This was Feel It Still was a number one record at pop, which was a huge thing. But to kind of go into that, what we do is the label has a roster, and at any given point, there's a schedule of releases. Everyone's coming out with albums. Everyone's coming out with content. The biggest of the big goes to radio. Some of you guys maybe have listened to it before. But there's a huge audience out there that still consumes radio. And the wonderful thing, and I always kind of describe it as radio promos, kind of like the icing on the cake. So you have great music, you can fill venues, but there's still more audience to have. And that can be gathered through radio. Through radio, you can hit fans that you never would have been able to hit on your own because your message, your work is just going far and wide. There's this theory out there called the reverse fan, or it's called the fan funnel. So if you take a triangle and flip it upside down, it looks like a funnel, right? They say when you're building your brand, if you're a band and you're building your audience, your super fans, if you break it out like an upside down food pyramid, the smallest portion, that small triangle at the bottom, is all of the super fans. They'll buy your tickets. They'll buy your shirts. They'll go stream your album nonstop. Like they're locked in, right? And then the further you go up that triangle and the wider it gets, the more passive the fans become. So for the most part, at any given moment, most of your fans will be passive, less of them will be super fans. And what you always want to do is have as many super fans as possible. How do you do that? You need a bigger funnel. So how do you push the walls of the funnel out more to give yourself more super fans? And the way radio plays into that is it gets your music to an audience that may not be aware of you. Radio is still a music discovery tool for a lot of people. In a different sense of, let's say, a streaming service. So
I was actually about to ask, because we had a great guest a couple weeks ago. His name was Bruce Ravid, who also started off in radio and still has his own radio show. And we were kind of talking about how radio comes into play now in the 21st century, and especially in 2020 with streaming services and all that. And one of the things that he brought up was that radio isn't really necessarily tastemakers anymore. They're not the ones kind of picking and choosing like what people should be listening to and all of that. That kind of comes from streaming services and you know, playlisting and all that. And those are who are like the tastemakers. Do you agree with that? Or do you think radio still has some kind of say on like what's good, what's new, and what you should be listening to?
I agree and I disagree.
Are you going to have an argument with yourself? Because I really would love if you would have an argument with yourself with like fourth grade voice and current voice, which is the same.
Every minute of every day. No, it's not every minute, only every other minute. Sorry, every other minute of every other day. So here's the thing. I think when it comes to music listeners, on a macro level, you break it down to two different types. There are music enthusiasts and passive music listeners. You can kind of create a Venn diagram with those two things, where traits of the music enthusiast is think pull streams. So a music enthusiast will go out of their way to find something. Music enthusiasts talk to other people who are into music and will listen and absorb music tastes from their friends and family. Passive music listeners are more of the push, right? So a passive music listener doesn't like music less than a music enthusiast. They just discover it differently. So maybe they come from a town where music isn't a big thing. Maybe they're the oldest of the group. Maybe they don't have those, you know, immediate tastemakers in their pocket. So to them, discovery is a little harder, or maybe they don't have the time to dive into the blogs. For us, like who would use MP3 lockers when we were younger, or Groove Shark, you know, you had to reach out to find all this material. And if you didn't have the time or interest, you weren't going to do that. But
actually an extension on that point, because obviously I don't work at a label, but I am an artist manager. And I use 3 degrees of fan. So like there's the hardcore fans, there's the fans, and then there's the casual fans. And the hardcore fans are the ones like name a band on Atlantic.
Let's go with Portugal the Man.
Okay, Portugal the Man. So the hardcore fans are going to buy every variant of vinyl. They're going to buy every single t-shirt. Anytime Portugal the Man comes to town or within like a few hour radius, they go to the shows. Mm-hmm. They're constantly promoting the band online. In fact, even better than the band does themselves. The fans, they like Portugal the Man. They have a shirt. They've seen them a bunch. They're not going to travel 3 hours to see Portugal the Man. And if, you know, if it works for their schedule, they'll see him. The casual fans, they're at a festival. And if Portugal the Man is not playing the same time as their favorite band, Paramore, they'll catch them. If, you know, they're not going to buy every shirt. In fact, they might not buy any shirt. If they're listening to a playlist and Portugal the Man comes on, they're not going to change the playlist. So the goal of an artist manager and a band is to turn casual fans into fans and fans into super fans.
Right. And you know what I love is like, we're speaking the same language. So just I feel like you just kind of, You listed it kind of in a linear fashion, but now if you take that linear fashion where you put hardcore fans on the bottom, fans in the middle, and casual fans at the top, and then you build that upside down triangle, that's your fan funnel.
Yeah, it's all about those hardcore bottoms, right, Scott?
Yo, I mean, that's another conversation called Waldman's Bottoms.
That's incredible.
That in your Instagram bio.
Will do. But again, to go back to the fact that, yes, there are all these different people who care about music and can become super fans, but just digest the music in a different way. So this is where I disagree that radio is not a tastemaker, in the sense of radio is not a tastemaker for the music enthusiast, but it is a tastemaker for the passive music listener, right?
1,000%, I agree with you. Because a lot of people aren't hardcore fans, and they get they hear about these bands because of the radio. They're not like the passionate music. And it's kind of like the gateway drug. Like the reason I know about Green Day, Weezer, and Nirvana is because of MTV.
Exactly.
Even conceptually, if I explained to you that there were a free music streaming service that you could listen to without a device, you'd tell me I'm crazy. And then I'd explain to you that it's called radio and more people are listening to it in 2020 than any point in history. And that's the name of the game, dude.
I think it's very deep. But yes, like coming from the indie world too, and the fact that we all in this conversation are music enthusiasts. Exactly. You know, whether we started as music enthusiasts or became that, we are all that. Not to be confused with the show that used to be on Nickelodeon that jump-started Kenan Thompson.
Not only Kenan, but Amanda Bynes.
Yeah. So with the passive and enthusiast model, same kind of person, but different discovery tools. And I think radio is the quintessential discovery tool for the passive music listener, which is why I think it's still so important. And it's such a great way to build fans. And we saw that with Portugal the Man. Before the song Feel It Still, they were doing those smaller venues. And after, and they had reached that critical mass, there were people who were listening to these pop radio stations who had no idea who Portugal the Man was, but now they knew about this song. And even if like five of these people who listened to top 40 radio realized that Portugal the Man was like their new favorite band, it was, I mean, you know, a successful mission. So it's really exciting to kind of see those experiences. But at the same time, I agree with Bruce in the sense that it is difficult. There are certain advantages and disadvantages to terrestrial radio versus streaming. One of which is, bandwidth, right? You know, on music streaming services.
Yeah.
Say what?
Pun intended.
Gosh, yes. Way to be on it. I appreciate that. I wanted to pun off of that again, but I'm going to have to swim downstream from this one.
Dude, you have to have a kid. I'm a dad joke. Once you
I've got a dog and he certainly keeps me busy. Oh. But I totally lost my
literal, train. Okay, so literal bandwidth. Yeah.
Literal bandwidth. Streaming services, we have endless shelf space, right? Like storage space in the data realm doubles every year and halves in cost. So putting stuff up there in the cloud is very easy, and costs you pretty much nothing. Compared to terrestrial radio, the way that commercial radio makes their money is off of commercials. So essentially, radio even kind of came up as being an audio billboard. So the thought was the money is made off of the commercials that advertisers spend money on. And what keeps people tuned in to essentially see these billboards through their ears is playing music to keep them tuned in, right? No one in the world goes to radio saying, I wonder what commercials I'm going to hear, or I wonder what channel I want to listen to commercials on.
Mike Castellucci, I listen to K-Rock for the commercials.
Oh, I'm sorry, baby Scott. I didn't mean to overlook you.
Sorry. All right. Anyway,
we can't have the K-Rock conversation right now.
Oh, well, yeah.
K-Rock's become like Post Malone and Billie Eilish.
Right. Well, and the fact that KYSR is out there now competing with them as well. And they're actually competing in the ratings.
Yeah.
K-Rock was acquired by Marula Media, I believe. Yeah.
And they dropped Kevin Lyman.
Not Lyman, yes. Warped
Tour. No, yeah. Not Kevin Lyman. Not Warped Tour Kevin Lyman. Kevin and Bean.
Yeah, Kevin from Kevin and Bean, for sure, yeah.
Crazy. A staple. Yeah.
But Kevin Lyman will never be dropped, okay? You back the fuck off, Jed.
He's the holder. He's got no one to drop him. He's the one who drops others.
Kevin James was dropped.
I think that Stone Cold Steve Austin is the one that drops others, but...
True.
But no, like you're right. And all of that stuff comes into play where, you know, a music purist or an enthusiast says, you know, I'm out of that league now. Like, don't tell me that Post Malone is alternative music. But to a passive music listener who doesn't know who Post Malone is, and then hears a song like Circles and hears a moving bass line and has maybe never heard that before, says, oh, wow, like this seems cool. It's like, congratulations to the music enthusiast. We just won another person over. And that's where commercial radio becomes so mainstream. And the thing that makes it harder is the fact that they don't have endless shelf space, because a lot of the, you know, quarter hours, right? Every 15 minutes, they're looking to get ratings. And within those 15 minutes, they may have commercials put in, and those commercial prices fluctuate, where if it's like during a peak drive time, it's going to be more expensive. So that's why we hear more commercials during the morning shows, because that's where they're making their bread. And then the other thing is, okay, how do we keep people tuned in? If we have super experimental stuff, the music enthusiasts will love it, but they're not really our audience, right? Like, we're going for mainstream appeal, and the people who are thinking, do I want to get a Pepsi or a Coke? You know, do I want insurance from Progressive, or do I want insurance from something else? And which is why all these commercials play. So they go after that listener, and they can only do so with enough music to stay familiar. So people say, oh, I remember this song and like it, rather than this song's a little bit too much for me and I'm going to tune out. So that's like a challenge that they have to face. As a music enthusiast myself, that's kind of where I can, you know, on the surface be like, oh man, like this is a real bummer. Like, you know, I wish they were more edgy and stuff, but like, I understand what it is. But then, you know, we have these moments when a band like Portugal the Man can go all the way. Right now, on the pop side of things, we have this guy named Alec Benjamin, who I think is well on his way to doing something as well. So, I mean, that's that, but I'll take a break for a second.
No, you're killing it. You're speaking about a lot of stuff that I think could really, really inform our listener base. I mean, a lot of people who check out this show are, I guess, late high school, early college, or even post-college, and they want to know what it's like working as a sound engineer, working, as a
manager. Can I give a short address to those people right now?
Yes.
Yeah. There are jobs. There are so many more opportunities in music than you even know about right now, but they're there. So look around, and I think especially these labels need the opinions and the experiences of younger adults, right? Because we're honestly, as a major label, looking to their habits all the time. Like, TikTok is a big part of what we do.
Yeah. Emily Burke started on TikTok.
Yeah.
I love TikTok. It's so interesting. It's so interesting to look into.
Can I be honest? I don't get it at all.
Yeah.
I
don't think it's my sister. I don't get it either.
Fucking old, dude. Exactly.
We don't have a lot of time, but just like a real quick thing about TikTok. Think of it like a streaming service, because you could distribute to TikTok like a streaming service. And people could use the song, and people discover music on TikTok almost like they discover on Spotify. There's top TikTok hits. And some people make music specifically for TikTok itself. So,
and some labels sign music that will fit on TikTok. I don't know if that's necessarily the right. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the right model, in my opinion, but it's going on, and it's certainly working for some people.
Well, and maybe you can speak to, we've seen song lengths shorten so that they can get more streams on platforms.
Without
a doubt. We've also seen TikToks be 15 seconds long, and I only hear the verse and half the chorus, and then it plays again. So,
Simple Plan, just so you know, because you do work at Atlantic, Simple Plan now again to a lot of people. And what's crazy is two of the guys in Simple Plan own Adobe Radio, and because of TikTok, their song went platinum.
And
there's a lot of other people that are doing that right now. To speak to your point about short music, there's this artist named Bozzy who is signed to Atlantic, or signed to APG, which is part of Atlantic. His song Mine, which you probably remember, that song was like, I think clocked in just about 2 minutes. It was one of the shortest songs that we put to radio, and the thing took off. And there is very much, for all the musicians out there who are wondering, what can I do to kind of get my music out there? How can I grab people's attention? Grab it early. The days of these kind of long intros and psychedelic, like, you know, spoken word intros, like it, leave it for your album, for your super fans. But if you want to catch the casual fans, get to the meat of your music and your content.
Gets the chorus.
Yeah, absolutely.
For real. But now, while we still have you, man, because sadly we're getting to the end of this episode of Waldman's Work. It's a sad wah, wah, wah. We also wanted
a trombone, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, oh, that's what that's called. We just want to hear, again, a lot of people on listening are young adults who are breaking into this industry. And like you said, it's endearing to hear that there are positions out there. But assuming that they are not ready to go run the Boston Marathon and staple their resume to their chest. Damn it, Chicago. And staple their resume to their forehead. What do you think immediate steps someone could take to start getting to work in your branch of the music industry?
Network. If you're in school, internships, because a lot of internships, first off, don't pay, but will accept college credit. The most impactful stuff I did in college, especially to get to where I am now, was doing the internships. You learn people there, you get an idea of what work could be like if you're even interested in it, and you can ask questions. And sometimes you may even have an answer that someone's looking for. You know, I had a moment as an intern where there was a marketing meeting once every week with the president of ILG, who now has gone on to become the president, or I guess maybe he's technically the COO. He's a very high up guy for international music with Warner Music Group. And I had the opportunity to be able to talk to this guy and present ideas to him as an intern. Like, those opportunities are out there and you learn so much from them.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest thing, is look into the internships. If you are involved in your scene, in your music scene, stay in it. You know, like, the best thing you can do is, well, it's weird now because you can't really go out to shows. But at the time, like, all the self-starters I know who are in the industry were going to shows. They were promoting shows. They were performing in shows. You know, it's all about living and breathing the culture in which you want to be in. Be a part of it. And people will recognize that.
Yeah. Cool, man. Yeah. Love what you do, for sure. It's a big theme on this show, as Scott said, be a self-starter and love what you do.
Yeah. I think across the music industry, whether you look at promoters, whether you look at label people, whether you look at musicians and managers, the ones who are successful and really hold their weight are the ones who just did everything. And, you know, I think looking at your long-term vision, you know, look in the short term, but when it comes to things like money, I know, you know, I'm sure this is maybe coming from a place of privilege, but, you know, figure out how to make the nut that you need and be able to see the vision of, hey, can I use this to pay the rent now, but can I also give myself time to invest in the stuff that I want to do? You know, like, if I have a day job, the best thing about that is I have nights to go to shows. I have nights to meet up with people and ask questions about how they got to their places, you know, and find a mentor, you know, be a sponge and just be a good person. And I think that's super helpful.
Bam.
Bam.
The best advice you can get.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
The best advice you could have possibly given.
Ah.
I think that was a great place to leave off at. And believe it or not, our 2 25-minute segments are at an end. So before we go off, Mike, tell everyone where they can find you, if you have any projects you're working on, socials, website, anything you want people to check out.
So the shameless plug would be at Atlantic Promotion on Instagram. We've created that social handle to promote our singles that we're working at radio in real time with actual people. There are some artists that you may have never heard of that you may get to learn about. There may be some artists that you know of that you get to see. So that's always fun. My handle is at Castellucci. I don't think there's a lot of really enticing stuff on there.
Your new bio.
But except for the new bio. Gosh, this is such a weird feeling, especially because I'm promoting so much stuff. And I know I can't go down the list, but gosh, this kid, Alec Benjamin, is a guy we're working right now who I just have so much belief in. He just put out an album on the 29th called These Two Windows. He's a 25-year-old kid who writes in the voice of, like, Paul Simon. It's incredible. This kid's got so much to say. Check him out. Kehlani is someone on our label who also put out an album called It Was Good Until It Wasn't, which is completely fitting for right now. And she is, you know, riding just more success than she's ever had and continues to grow. So another great person to know. The Atlantic promo page will give you all that stuff. I'll just leave it there.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today on the show, The Looch, Mike Castellucci. Thank you so much for coming on, dude.
Dude, thank you guys. This was awesome.